From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Akwan and on demand as a podcast. It is First Friday, April 5th, 2024. I'm your host, Andy Klein. Gunashish, thank you for joining the conversation. And on today's show, the Juno Skating Club is having its annual spring show this weekend, featuring the 2023 Junior National Pairs Champions, along with local skaters. We're going to have a preview of that. The Burn Thompson Writers Group celebrates National Poetry Month with a reading from their poems tomorrow. We'll chat with a couple of members about this celebration. And there's going to be a solar eclipse coming up this Monday. We won't see that much of it here in Alaska, but Quinn White from the Marie Drake Planetarium will share astronomical properties and more about this fascinating phenomena. Those conversations plus Curious Juno. Garden talk, lots more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. I hope you'll join us. In the weather, rain with a few snow showers mixed in is forecast for this weekend and highs in the mid-40s. And then rain is in the forecast for next week as well. It's April showers, everyone.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hanson Grass. Ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na kaya ha ani kak. Gunish cheese.
Well, here's a question for you. Whatever happened to the fast food restaurants that used to be in Juno? Or Taco Bell, Wendy's, Burger King, multiple McDonald's, so many. There was Kentucky Fried Chicken and on and on. Taco Time, so many great fast food restaurants. I miss them, as you can tell. But whatever happened to them? Everyone wants to know that. So many questions have come in about that. And that is the subject of this week's Curious Juno.
Fast food restaurants have ebbed and flowed out of Juno for decades, but very few have stuck around for long. Beyond Subway, McDonald's, Domino's, Papa John's, and Papa Murphy's, you won't find any other national chains in the capital city. Sure, there are restaurants like Pelmini's or Crepe Escape downtown where you can get food fast, but that's not what we're talking about. Some residents like Ked Judson, who is grabbing a Subway sandwich during a recent lunch hour, wish they had more options.
Well, you know, Taco Bell, Burger King, or Arby's, or, you know, we see the commercials, but we're always stuck with just the one McDonald's, and there used to be other stuff. So I think there's still room for more.
He's right. Partly. Juno once had popular chains like Taco Bell, Burger King, and Wendy's. And some even had multiple locations. But they came and went. Several Curious Juno listeners asked KTOO why that is. Any day of the week, you can pull up to McDonald's in Juno and grab a Big Mac and fries. It's right by the McNugget intersection.
Hello, order when you're ready.
One time, there were two McDonald's in Juno. The first, which still exists today, opened in 1982 near the airport. When it opened, corporate officials said it sold more hamburgers and fries in its first week than any other store in the company's history. 4 years later, a second McDonald's opened downtown, where Heritage Coffee is now. But that one closed in 2010. There's no Taco Bell in Juno today, but at one time there were two. Wendy's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Time, Burger King, and Baskin Robbins. They all came and went by the mid-90s. Burger King even had a food truck, but that shut down too.
It's interesting when you look historically at Juno. I mean, we've had a Kentucky Fried Chicken for years that isn't here anymore, and a Taco Time and a Taco Bell. McDonald's is sort of the sole success story, right?
That's Bruce Denton, who opened the Senate building on South Franklin Street downtown in 1982 and still owns it today. Wendy's and Burger King had locations there in the 80s. Denton says the downtown area is tough for restaurants in general, but especially fast food, because you can't put in a drive-through and there's not enough foot traffic.
They clearly weren't getting enough traffic, particularly in the winter. And you think about the cruise ship passengers, they're one thing about the cruise is that they're royally fed, right? So there are not a lot of tourists that are scrambling in to eat.
One of the few fast food restaurants in Juneau that has passed the test of time is Subway. Its owner is Assemblymember Wade Bryson. He says owning any business in Juneau is tough, but trying to make money in fast food here is like walking a razor-thin wire.
What do you call a business without profit? You call it closed. And so once a business doesn't cross a profit threshold, it can't continue to operate. It is hands down one of the most challenging locations in the United States to operate a business.
Bryson took over the two existing Subway restaurants in Juneau in 2004, one in the Valley and one downtown. But the downtown location burned down in less than a year. He opened another one in Lemon Creek in 2010, then he opened another one downtown, but closed it in 2020. He says like many businesses in Juneau, fast food restaurants deal with three big issues: inflated prices, lack of housing, and a struggle to find workers. To make a profit, he says he typically needs to charge about 30% more than a Subway sandwich would cost in the lower 48.
The cost of food is just escalating literally on a daily basis. And in Alaska, the housing crisis, which led to the employment crisis, which led to the wage crisis, which has now compounded the housing crisis. I mean, it's all just circling.
None of this is new. Even back in 1995, former McDonald's owner and operator Mike White told the Juneau Empire that finding employees in Juneau was tough. Dale Martins, the former vice president of the Anchorage Taco Bell of Alaska, was quoted in the story saying that staffing in Juneau, quote, has always been a challenge. Now, Bryson says the demand for fast food in Juneau hasn't gone away, but running a restaurant in Juneau often just doesn't pencil out.
I wish I had a dollar for every person that asked me to open up Taco Bell again here in town. I would have had enough money to do it.
In the meantime, you can always head to El Sombrero or Marisol to get your taco fix. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Welcome back. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on community-supported KTOO. And joining us now are folks from the Juneau Skating Club. Leah Farzan is here. Leah, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having us,
Great
Andy.
To see you again. How are you?
I'm great. How are
yeah.
you?
And we have with us two esteemed champions. So exciting to have here in the studio, Timothy Chapman and Ellie Koryatek. Do I have that? Get that right?
Yep.
Okay. And and you guys were both junior national pairs champions in 2023. What an amazing achievement.
Thank you.
Really
thank
cool. You. Is that, I mean, tell me a little bit about, and we'll talk in a minute here about what's happening, which is that you guys are going to be part of the Flipping the Channel over at Treadwell Arena, the show that's happening tonight, starting at 7 o'clock, and then also tomorrow. But tell me a little bit about this junior national. I mean, is it the thing that I'm thinking of, like this intensely insane competition, national competition, people coming from all over the country? And yeah, it is. You're sort of nodding your head like, yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it took a lot. We worked really hard for it, and there was a lot of amazing skaters in our group, and we had only been training for 7-8 months yeah. at that point as a new pair team, and yeah. we were just
yeah that year we partnered up and everything kind of just worked out.
Tell me
and
about the journey of getting interested in pairs, and specifically, like, I'm assuming you both started off as individual skaters and probably showed a lot of promise in certain ways, right? You were very good. You're recognized as very good, but then went into pairs. Ellie, I'll just ask you first, like, so how did that decision happen for you?
So one of my older coaches, she recommended doing pairs just because there was this guy, you know, and, I started doing pairs and I enjoyed it so much.
There was a guy that was looking for a partner
yes.
to work with
yes.
and he was very good and
yeah.
she thought, okay, you two would work well together.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
And then from there, I just enjoyed doing pairs, the art of it, like looking at it, and I just fell in love with pears.
It is beautiful. I mean, yeah. I, as a complete layman to figure skating, as Leah can attest when we've talked before, I was like, okay. But I mean, it is beautiful. I've done a tiny little dabbled in dancing, right, myself, you know, with my wife. So I like that it's feels like, oh, it's an expression, a beautiful expression of dancing on the ice, yeah, without so much of the kind of wild, you know, things that happen, right? Yeah. So what are some of the rules of pairs versus just, you know, versus, say, dancing, right? There's also dancing, right?
Oh, yes.
And then there's also, so what are some of the rules there that
well,
happen?
Well, a major difference between dance, like ice dance and pairs, is there's overhead lifts. So in ice dance, you can't really go over the shoulders for lifting. And then also, you know, we have our side-by-side jumps and spins, where kind of the single skating comes into part in the pairs world. I would say those are probably the biggest,
right,
you know, differences of the two.
What are some of the challenges? I'll ask you both, but what are some of the challenges of being the man in pairs and then being the woman in pairs? I know that's just what you do.
Sure.
So it's hard for you to know, but what do you see as sort of the special, unique things about that, Ellie?
Definitely not being scared of doing crazy things like
like being thrown on the ice by another person. Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, the biggest part is probably trust in the person.
Right. Sure.
That you're doing things with. I think the biggest part is definitely trust, because if you have trust, I feel like it comes way easier.
It is an interesting thing to think about. You're really, I mean, for the woman especially, I think, you're trusting so much about the lift and the amount of force that's being given and the actual way that you're being turned and things like that, right? Yeah. I mean, and if that's all on you, or a lot of that's on you, to make sure you get that part of it right, or else she can't perform the maneuver.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially in the lifts, it's definitely 50-50, like, amount of work and you know, connection between the two of us. I would say probably definitely the hardest part is keeping her safe. And, you know, if something were to go wrong, you know, making sure she's safe. She's, you know, what, 7-8 feet up in the air with blades. And, you know, so just keeping her safe is main priority for the guy, for me in general. So,
and keeping yourself away from those blades.
yeah, that too. We've definitely run into some issues.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But yeah, I can imagine. I mean, that is an interesting thing. I never would have thought that perspective, but that a major thing that's going through your mind all the time is keeping your partner in a safe position. And Wow. Yeah.
So she's able to do the things that she needs to do, you know, lifting wise and putting herself in the positions that she needs to, you know.
Has there been a moment of being truly scared? Like, oh no, this has gone horribly wrong? Not yet.
I don't think so. No,
like
never. Like, yeah, and we've never had like an actual full-on incident where, you know, something happened. So
knock on wood.
Yeah, knock on wood. That's right. Because it is interesting. We think of it as this beautiful sport, ballet kind of on ice, but you know what you don't think about is that it is a dangerous sport, dangerous sport.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of time and practice with each other, you know, knowing our, you know, certain movements and, you know, where we need to put, you know, the body, you know, for specific things. So.
Yeah. We start off on the floor with, you know, the tricks, and then we take them on the ice once they're ready.
How do you know what's the process when you know they're ready, or you know you want to try it, or is it staged sort of, or...
I think it's so we start doing these new tricks or learning new tricks. And then once we have it down, like it's consistent and it's starting to work very well each time every day, we just slowly, you know, take it on the ice.
Are there times when you're not even on the ice during a day, or are you always on the ice, always working? And then there's studio time too, sort of, or how does that?
Yeah, we take it kind of day by day. There's definitely a lot of both. We do a lot of off ice, making sure that we're warmed up and, you know, nothing dangerous is happening out there. And then we'll have a lot of on ice time. We kind of, we do a little bit of both.
Yeah. How long did it take you to kind of work up that one routine? Was it just one routine that you do for juniors, or is there a short program or long or something like that?
You got it. So there's a short program and a long program.
Yeah.
We, like I said, for that, when we paired up, it took us about 8 months.
8 months.
To get that all prepared.
Wow. What an amazing amount of work, right?
Yeah.
Incredible.
We
plus
really
you're
hard.
Obviously also in school and you're doing stuff like that, right? I mean, I'm assuming that, right?
Yep.
So now you were just saying that, so now you've kind of hit this pinnacle in junior nationals, or at least in nationals, I guess.
Yep.
I guess there's also internationals and there's those kinds of things too. Did you then compete in that as well? Or is that, how does that work? How do the kind of contest schedules work and stuff?
Yeah. Usually, after nationals, you're kind of on this international selection pool to go, do internationals. We are in this,
Age thing happening, right?
Yeah, where we weren't eligible for junior international competitions just because I'm too old for junior.
I see. What's the age group for junior?
I believe the guy needs to be 21 for junior, and
the girl needs
16.
No, so? For junior, no.
See, or 18.
Yeah,
18, so. And 21. So
okay.
I'm 23.
Okay.
So I was too. Past that threshold of doing junior international competitions. So, this past year, we decided that we wanted to go into senior, just to get those years kind of, get that resume going and, get those senior years under our belts so that when we are ready for the senior international selection pool, we've already had some experience.
Does this sport, and we're going to get to your show in a minute, Lee, but it's so fascinating.
This is so wonderful.
I just think it's so interesting to talk to people that are at this level. It's just amazing. And is there amateur status? Are you professionals? Do NILs come in? Are there those kinds of things that start happening? Are those considerations? You have to obviously be able to afford doing this. So how does that all happen in the ice skating world for you?
Yeah. So, I actually took up a job in coaching. My mom is a director, in Florida. So I are already had some experience
kind of
in the know for teaching skating and being a part of the, very competitive high performance, competitions had, taught me a lot too on how to, bring that to the table for students and other kids that are trying to learn how to, become figure skaters and, whatnot. So that definitely helps. And then, with all these opportunities for shows, we do have to keep our amateur status. So, that sometimes require us to, pay, a certain amount for us to keep our amateur status, depending on our contracts that we're doing, depending on the shows that we're doing. That there is a certain, threshold. If you do want to go into professional, you would have to, stop the competitive career.
Well, all stuff ahead of you. And obviously it's so cool to just talk to you about this stuff. And it's exciting to think that you're going to be skating on our Treadwell rink, our humble
beloved Treadwell Arena.
Yes. So let's talk about it. It's called Flipping the Channel.
Yeah.
It's happening at Treadwell Arena. So tonight's the first show, 7 p.m. And then tomorrow there's two shows, 3 and 7 p.m. It's all happening, of course, at Treadwell Arena. Tell me a little bit about the program and what's going to be happening, Leah.
Well, it's going to be great. I think we have 55 skaters in it, plus our esteemed, wonderful guest skaters here who
57
have graced
skaters.
Yes, I know. counting's not my strong point. And it's all ages. Our youngest skater in the show this year is 4.
Wow.
Our oldest, someone told me, was 63.
Wow.
We've got the whole range. Yeah, we've got 3 synchro teams. We've got duos, we've got trios, we got solos. You will probably know someone in this ice show.
Yeah, right. That's sort of how it goes.
Yeah, that's Juno for you. it's TV themed. You're gonna hear a lot of familiar, fun music that you might know from television shows. The kids have The kids especially have gotten really into the theme. So they're having a lot of fun out there. And I think it really translates to the audience.
That's awesome.
This year. Yeah.
Are you guys going to be doing the program you did in competition for the Junior National Championship? Or is it something a little bit different or modified? Or
yeah. So we decided that we wanted to do our senior short program. It's a mix up of Michael Jackson songs. Really fun. We have a great time with it. And we did modify it a little bit.
Do you have the glove?
No glove.
Hold on, Andy. Like, they can't
hold on to her.
Grip.
Oh, that's true.
It's very important.
A sequin glove would not be a good idea.
It's a good risk in Paris.
That's me not knowing the sport. So there you go. Okay.
Yeah. So, and we did modify it to make it a little bit more exciting than it already is. We're excited about that. And we also have put together some Barbie numbers too. Barbie and Ken.
That's so, cool. Yeah, very cool.
Got a couple of those. So it's really
pink lighting and going to be happening. Ooh. Maybe let's see if we can get Treadwell.
I got to make
lighting.
Some calls.
Yeah. That'd be good. Is there, when you guys think about your strengths, as far as like what you bring, what are some of the things that you feel like you as a pair are the strengths that, you want to be kind of known for?
I think our lifts are one of our biggest strengths and our tricks, for sure.
And when you say tricks, what is that? What are some of the examples? Throw some terms at me about tricks.
What are tricks?
Headbanger.
A headbanger. That sounds dangerous, right?
That's kind of our big trick in one of our programs. Actually, the Michael Jackson program.
Yeah.
Really? The headbanger. Yeah. Watch for the headbanger.
Yes.
Watch out for the headbanger.
It only comes out at shows. That's not something you do in competitions, right?
It's an illegal move in.
Is it
in
a flip?
The competitive
kind of
world.
Thing? Or is it
no.
A.
No. I actually am.
Why is it illegal?
I'm holding her by her feet and I am taking her up and down. Pretty close to the ice with her head.
So the ISU doesn't.
You really are not afraid, are you? That is, maybe you should be a little more afraid. Well, that's awesome. So watch for the headbanger. That's going to be a featured thing for sure. Yep. And it's all going to be part of the program Flipping the Channel. It's happening at Treadwell Arena. Tonight's the first show, 7 p.m. Also happening tomorrow, 3 and 7 p.m. Tickets at the door and also at Eventbrite. Is that right?
Eventbrite. So, and there should be a link on our website, junoskatingclub.org.
Just go to junoskatingclub.org and go check out and get the tickets from there. All right. Well, thanks so much. Go ahead.
We usually have a dessert auction at every show, but we only have a dessert auction tonight. So if you want to leave with a delicious treat, you got to come on Friday. Got to come
perfect today. Thanks to all of you for coming in. Really great to meet you. And thanks so much for letting me pick your brain about the world of highly competitive figure skating. It's really cool to talk to you guys. Thanks
for
coming to town.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Leah. Coming up next, we're going to chat with Bern Thompson Writers Group about their celebration reading tomorrow in honor of the National Poetry Month. But first, Garden Talk is back for the 2024 season. KTOO's Morning Edition host Chloe Plesnack talks with Ed Byarski about what prospective gardeners should consider heading into April.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Chloe.
So April has begun. The spring equinox was on March 19th, and we've had this little warm spell. So what should prospective gardeners be thinking about this time of year?
How many tomatoes are we going to get in August? How about our carrots? Are we going to have a good crop this year? But really, it's a time for cleanup in the garden. If we didn't do cleanup last fall, getting all the old dead cabbage and broccoli plants out of there and other slimy stuff, and removing slug habitat is a good start. Greenhouse cleanup, tidying up, same thing goes there. And if folks are like me, we had a greenhouse collapse this winter, getting that new greenhouse on order or rebuilt or whatever.
With that little warm spell that we had followed by some of this colder weather, are these temperature changes going to affect plants or bugs heading into spring or any of that prep that we were just talking about?
Oh, how about a definite maybe? Our forecasting of gardening weather is shaky at best. And so the warm spell was great. I've been uncovering my garlic. It's sprouting beautifully. We have some crocus and snowdrops and hellebores are blooming. That's a good thing. And this little bit of cold spell, well, luckily wasn't that cold, really to damage the flower buds. Those are the ones that are most easily damaged by cold weather. There isn't any really warm weather in our forecast, but not much more cold weather either, hopefully. So a gradual warm up is good. That's what we want. Waking up the soil microorganisms too, if we're mixing in some compost and some organic fertilizers into our garden beds, and making sure, really important, is to have your garden beds covered with clear plastic right now so the soil can warm up. That's really the best thing we can do really all summer, is keeping our soil warmer. So we're cheating. You know, we're trying to encourage everything to grow better, whether the clear plastic is directly on the soil, or we have hoops with clear plastic over them, little mini greenhouses, all of that will help. And then, of course, it kind of leads into seed starting for the things, whether for outdoor plants, cabbages and broccoli, lettuce, and that sort of thing, or indoor stuff like tomatoes, peppers. It's too early for cucumbers yet. So again, that's where looking at reading the seed packets is really worthwhile to help tell us what or when we should be doing that stuff. One thing for me that I have found helpful as I have become rather mature is getting in garden shape. That is doing some stretching exercises each day. I mean, I have become very diligent about doing that. Exercise, getting the shoulders exercise, stretching out the back and the legs and all of the rest of that. If we're going to be digging and raking and shoveling, all of that on a real nice, sunny, warm weekend, folks get out and rake their lawn. And on Monday morning, they call their chiropractor to say, I'm really sore. Please help me adjust. So preparing yourself, getting ready for the physical gardening efforts really helps. Look at the local, check out the local retailers who are going to be selling plants already. Of course, seeds have been out there in the stores for months. Acquiring those or even ordering stuff. Or again, talking to the local growers. I'll throw myself in that hat and ask, when are we going to be able to get seeds? Seedlings, seed potatoes, when are the flowers coming in? Hanging baskets, again, we'll see those usually early May. Again, I was just at one of the local retailers and they've got greenhouses full of flowering baskets. The challenge is going to be keeping them warm, unfrozen, until our last frost date, whenever that happens, which is variable around town from Douglas to out the road where I live.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Ed, for your time. And we'll chat soon, hopefully when there is less coldness in the weather and more plants in the ground.
Well, that was Ed Byarski talking with KTOO's Coy Plesnack for this week's Garden Talk. For more Garden Talk, visit kto.org/gardentalk or subscribe in your podcast app of choice. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO. And joining me now, Mary Lou Spartz and Richard Stokes, from the Byrne Thompson Writers Group. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. And you're here in celebration of what we just learned is the largest literary celebration in the world, National Poetry Month.
Yes.
Yes, with great import, we come with National Poetry Month. But it is a really wonderful time to think about setting aside a little bit of time, maybe every day, or maybe as we're going to do at the end of the week, to read poetry, recite poetry, maybe talk to friends about poetry. And you all are going to be doing that coming up tomorrow. So tell me a little bit about the event that's happening tomorrow.
Well, it's sponsored by the CBJ Museum. They've been very good to us now for several years in sponsoring this annual reading. And so it is scheduled from 2 until 3:45 at the City Museum. There'll be about 8 members of the Byrne Thompson Writers Group that will read. So each of us will read 4 to 6 minutes, somewhere in that range. And in the past, it's been, you know, attended mainly by spouses and family and a few friends, reluctant or otherwise.
And, so we're looking for a little broader community representation here.
Looking for literary pleasure, you know, whatever. But it's been a very fun group. And the Byrne Thompson writers, and we are mainly poets now, but we also have had prose writers. We meet typically every 2 weeks at the downtown library, and there has been a writing group that I have been involved with since the early 1990s. But Byrne Thompson herself came in the 80s, and she sort of took over the writing group, which was really flagging at the time, and revived it. She died in 2013, and we named the group after her death.
Nice. So. That's a really nice remembrance. I'm sure mm-hmm. that's something that's a lovely way of thinking about and remembering a writer and someone who loved poetry and writing.
And just a little bit more about Byrne. Byrne came to town homeless. She was robbed a couple of times after being here. So she had she had some health problems. Mm-hmm. And so it was really remarkable that she, you know, could get herself to and from these meetings and also have such a strong personality to keep the group together. So it's she deserves the credit that we try to give her.
It's also a testament to the power of writing and the power of literature and poetry to reinforce people and bring strength to people.
She was a remarkable woman. She had degrees in creative writing and physics, which is a strange combination.
Mary Lou, tell mm-hmm. me a little bit about when you think about the poems that you want to emphasize for this event, are there themes or are there things like that you think about as far as what sort of poems you want to bring people's attention to and want to read?
Well, no, we don't have a theme that we'd like very much this particular celebration to honor our poet. Our writer laureate, Heather Lindley, who's from Haines,
yes.
Our neighbor. And Heather's been a very generous writer laureate, and is always available and eager to talk to writers and to respond to them and to come and talk with them. And we'd like to recognize what she has been willing to do with her life around writing in general.
She's such an energetic force of nature, you
yes.
know?
Yeah, she's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a great, great choice for that office that she holds, that yeah. position, that title that she has, which is great. Well, do you have examples of a couple of poems? Maybe we can take a couple minutes here and recognize the power of the written word and of poetry yeah. and get people excited about the National Poetry Month, which we also just discovered, was established by the Academy of American Poets in 1996, and a great excuse to read poetry and hear poetry. Yeah.
Well, this is a poem that I was fortunate enough to have published in Cirque. Cirque is a magazine, literary magazine that comes out of Anchorage, publishes twice a year, and we always look forward to, they do a beautiful job put to their publication, and they have poets from all over Alaska and writers. It's not just limited to poetry. Now, this is called Rob Elementary. On a late spring morning, he will paint his tongue with bitterness, mix it with hate, let it slide down his throat. Bitterness is a strong taste. Memories he packs in a box. He will leave a note for his brother to burn them. His body will go to the electronic pyre. Carefully, he picks black to wear. They will drive the Chevy to school in his, he will drive his white Chevy to the school with complete with the, I'm losing my glasses, complete with an arsenal in the back. Once he's parked, he will pick a weapon, find an unlocked room, and do what must be done. It is the right thing to do. That's kind of a sobering poem.
Mm, my goodness. Very powerful.
Mm. Sorry, I read it so poorly.
No, it was beautiful. I really appreciate you taking the time to read it. And don't worry about the glasses falling off. It's radio. No one can see it. Richard, do you have an example of a poem you'd...
Well, I do, and I'll try to lighten the mood.
Yes.
Just a little bit.
That was sobering.
This is entitled After the Winter Solstice, and of course it's somewhat past the solstice, but it's still a spring poem. After the winter solstice, even if you listen carefully, you will not hear the change in buds tightly clenched against winter. But deep in alder and cottonwood thickets, a buzz has started as more light cascades over fist-tight buds, triggers tingles of expectation and hope, a day-by-day quickening leading to the green aromatic explosion of spring.
That's nice. That's
very nice.
Yeah,
very nice, Richard.
Thanks so much to both of you for reading those poems. I appreciate it. Once again, the event is happening tomorrow. It's from 2 to 4 p.m. It's at the City Museum. Mm-hmm. And it's the Byrne Thompson Writers Group, which this happens every April. You have a reading of the poem of your poems to celebrate National Poetry Month. Mm-hmm. And thanks so much for both of you for coming. I appreciate it. Anything else you want to cover?
One quick thing. It has nothing to do with the reason that Mary Lou and I are here, but Tidal Echoes has their launch tonight at the university, and Misty St. Clair is the featured writer, and she's also a member of the Byrne Thompson group. So put in a plug
for
Misty.
Yeah, Misty's a great poetry.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful magazine and wonderful resource that's put out by the university.
Yes.
Tidal Echoes.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, thanks to both of you for coming in. I appreciate it. Happy National Poetry Month to both of you. And have a great time with the readings and the celebration and sharing of poems that's going to be happening tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. at the City Museum. And thanks so much. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Andy.
All right.
Thank you, Andy.
like wine. Oh, she's got eyes like the sun. Oh, she's got eyes like the sun today.
That's Quentin Woolman, a little music there from Folk Fest that we'll be looking forward to. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and with me now is Quinn White. He's a board member at the Marie Drake Planetarium. And Quinn, we're going to talk about solar eclipses.
That's right. Thank you so much for having me.
Everyone's hearing about this big swath of a total solar eclipse that's going to go from kind of north to south, sort of across the continental U.S. and down through Central America. But we probably won't see it much here, right?
Not really. And it's actually, weirdly enough, kind of going to go the other direction.
Usually we think south to north.
Right. Yeah. Oh. Usually we think of, you know, the sun and the moon rising in the east and setting in the west. But this is kind of doing the opposite just because of the way that the bodies in the sky interact.
Oh, so that's interesting.
It'll start down in Mexico and then head up towards like Maine, Vermont area.
So. And with Steve Kosas from the Planetarium, who often talks to us here on the air, he's actually down in Mazatlan right now. He's getting ready for that eclipse.
That's right. Yeah, he's a pretty avid eclipse chaser. That's why he couldn't be here today. But he's getting ready, and he's spent quite a lot of time, and he's been under quite a few eclipses. So he spent more than a half hour under totality and seen like over half a dozen eclipses.
Have you ever seen a total eclipse?
I have not, unfortunately. I've seen a lunar eclipse, which is pretty spectacular as well, but not a full solar eclipse.
Same here. I've seen a lunar, and it's wild.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Yeah. Orange, and all of a sudden it's just like, but solar eclipse, and the friends of mine who have seen the solar eclipse all rave about it. It's incredible.
Yeah. You know, you hear from people, even avid scientists who go to see it, and a lot of the time they'll say the same thing, which is, once totality hits, you want to put down your binoculars, put down your phone, put down your camera, and just experience it, you know, because it's only, the longest ones are really only about 7 minutes, and the shortest ones can be only like 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
So you kind of just want to experience that totality for the few minutes you have it.
I've heard from friends of mine that have seen, I've had friends that went down to Carbondale, Illinois for the last one that was a big center of where it was going to happen. And then it got cloudy. So they like hightailed it down to, I think they ended up in Kentucky maybe or something. Anyway, they ended up nearby and they got to see it. They just stopped in a field where a bunch of people were standing. And they said that observing the natural world around them was so fascinating. Birds, for instance, and all kinds of like just strange behaviors were happening.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty common occurrence. Even some of the earliest modern records we have of eclipses. One of the scientists was trying to observe the solar eclipse and trying to see if he could record the temperature of the sun's corona, which is kind of the sun's atmosphere. But unfortunately, the spot he chose was in a chicken coop, and all the chickens came home to roost because they thought it was getting dark. So it definitely has a pretty unique effect on the natural world. You can see animals get kind of confused. You know, the birds will start, you know, singing like it's nighttime and then get really confused because it's not. So right. It's a pretty strange event even for the natural world.
Yeah, fascinating. And it is interesting that they treat it differently than like in a massively cloudy day or something like where there's not as much sunshine. But they definitely pick up on there's something different happening.
Yeah, they can tell. They can tell that, you know, the light level is decreasing such to an amount that it should be nighttime, but isn't. So, yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit more about kind of what people should know about eclipses.
Yeah. So, you know, we think of them as pretty rare, and they are, but there's actually one every few years. They come in these cycles called Saros cycles, and you can actually look up a diagram or a map of kind of the ways and the times that they come in. And interestingly enough, every solar eclipse is actually matched with a lunar eclipse. So 2 weeks before every solar eclipse or 2 weeks after, you'll see a lunar eclipse.
The same area, essentially?
Actually, in a slightly different area. So there was one just about a week and a half ago, for this upcoming solar one, there was a lunar eclipse just recently. And it was technically visible here, but again, with clouds and that kind of thing, it was a little bit difficult to see. But just because of the orientation, you know, the moon takes about a month, of course, to get around the Earth. And so 2 weeks before the solar eclipse, there's going to be a lunar eclipse. So there was one just a couple weeks ago, and usually they go in these cycles where there's a lunar and then a solar, or a solar and then a lunar.
Yeah, I never knew that. That's really fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit off topic, and we'll talk about the solar eclipse as well. But sure. I'm sure a lot of people have been hearing with the changes that are happening in the school district and the school buildings. Marie Drake, where the planetarium is cycling out of being owned by the school district and going back to CBJ. Is there any news that you know of or can relay to people about what the future of the planetarium is under that plan?
Yeah. So the good news basically is that right now there's no bad news. We don't have anything concrete. What I can say is that we're in the right processes, and we're communicating with the right people, both within the assembly and the school board. So it's definitely a process that we're working through, and we hope to have a good outcome. If people want to be involved or they want to, make their voices heard, definitely go to our website, mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Shoot us an email, let us know how you want to help, volunteer, be involved, and definitely just be on the lookout for any future notices we put out about asking for community engagement with the assembly. So I'm sure there will be an opportunity for the public to voice their support for the planetarium very soon. Here.
That's a great point. This is a good time for the public to let our public officials know that the Marie Drake Planetarium is important to them. They want it to find a home.
Yeah.
And they want it to continue on serving the community the way it does.
Yeah. It's a great resource that we have here in town. We definitely don't want to see it go away. Like I said, unfortunately, I don't have more information for you at the moment, but we're always looking for help, for volunteers and, resources, or just if you have a question. So, check us out on our website, email us, come to our shows. That's all that we can really hope for right now is just seeing the public and having them support us.
Are there any shows coming up that people should know about?
Yeah, so we have a show tonight. It's just a first Friday show, so it's going to be kind of open house style from 5:30 to 7. I'll be there running the system, flying us around to different planets. I'll probably show a couple short videos, ask questions. So, just kind of a casual show tonight. And then this weekend, both tomorrow, Saturday, and on Sunday, we're going to be having two matinees for each day. So definitely come out and see those. And those will be talking about the eclipse.
Oh, okay.
Those are going to be kind of kid-friendly shows. Those are going to be at 2 and 3:30 on both tomorrow and Sunday. So it'll be kind of a 25-minute video about the eclipse, good for kids of all ages. We're recommending kind of third grade and up, but we've had a few kids have seen it already that are younger than that, and they seem to enjoy it as well.
So yeah.
All ages are welcome.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
And are there other plans in the works for other kind of shows, kind of maybe a sneak preview of stuff you guys are thinking about?
Yeah, we're always thinking about shows. We're always, putting stuff together. And a lot of what kind of our more planned shows come out of is either things that are currently going on in the world, like the solar eclipse, or if people have questions of us. Some of the best shows that we've done in the past few years have just been someone has a question about galaxies or black holes or star formation, and we put together a whole little show about that. So if anyone has a question or a show that they'd like to see something specific about, definitely let us know.
When you say you put together shows about, how do you go about doing that? Like what are some of the resources that you tap into in order to fly us to planets or do those kinds of things?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So our system, the projector, the digital projector that we got in 2019 with the support of the community and a few different organizations, has a lot of great built-in resources. So it has all the planets in the solar system. We can fly to them, land on them, fly around, look at orbits and, kind of the bodies within our solar system, and even fly out and look at the whole galaxy. But then as well as we put together slideshows, we can put little videos. Some of the most fun things we have are our full dome movies. So those are, videos that show on the full dome. But a lot of times we're even, one of our most recent shows was just Steve showing some photos and some personal experiences from eclipses. So we get a lot of resources either just from, from our own collection. One of our other volunteers is a very avid astrophotographer, so he takes his own pictures of space. And then we get a lot of resources from NASA, from the European Space Agency. There's some amazing educators on YouTube and just online that do amazing, space outreach to the public. So a wide variety, but I always go back to the NASA websites and some of those organizations because they just have so much good resources everywhere from, fully published papers papers for astronomers all the way down to elementary school grade level.
Some of the stuff on the NASA website, especially like the Webb telescope stuff, is extraordinary to
look
at.
It's amazing. Yeah, some of those photos, it's like an artist did them. You know, it's just incredible.
Yeah, yeah. If for anyone who's kind of just dabbling or interested, wants to maybe start into the world of being an amateur astronomer, what are some tips that you have for people? What sort of gear should they start with? Or, you know, how can people get involved in starting that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's always a little bit tricky here in Juneau just because of the weather.
Sure.
But even with that, there's some great things you can do. One of the things I always recommend is just get a good pair of binoculars. Some of the biggest things you can see in the sky, like Jupiter, the moon, you can actually get a pretty good view of those, even just with some good, you know, boat binoculars. We also, you know, recommend even decent little telescopes are usually good for looking at the moon or the planets, some of this, you know, larger constellations. One of my biggest recommendations is get a good red headlamp. Red light is the best for keeping your night vision on. You know, you want to be
your eyes adjusted correctly.
Exactly.
In other words,
yeah. You want to have your eyes as adjusted to the dark as possible, and with a red light that gets it's kind of the minimal amount of interference, so it doesn't mess up your night vision as much. So
yeah.
I always recommend, you know, bringing something like that, and then just knowing the right places to go in town. You know, the North Douglas boat launch, the parking lot out by the glacier, just somewhere where you can get a good kind of uninterrupted view of the sky is some of the best.
A little
spots.
Less light pollution, that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Well, once again, what's happening tonight?
Yeah, so it's First Friday. I'll be there. We'll have a couple volunteers hanging out, answering questions from 5:30 to 7. So stop on by the Marie Drake Planetarium, bring your questions. We'll be showing probably a couple little videos. I'll be flying us around to different planets and, just showing people a good time.
All right, great. And solar eclipse, it's not too late to get over to Vermont, I guess. You could get there by Monday.
It's not. You could, I'm sure plane tickets are not cheap, but if you want to try it, you know, it's probably worth it.
Do you know off the top of your head when the next one that might get closer to us is?
Yeah, so the next one that's going to be in North America is going to be quite a while. I believe it's not till the 2040s or something
like
that.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
So the eclipses kind of go in cycles, so that it's about 120 degrees around the globe.
I see.
So the next big one will be in Egypt I believe it's 2027.
Well, less cloud cover in Egypt,
yes,
at least.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the big things with eclipses is there's all these maps that show the path of totality, but then you want to kind of overlay that with the weather map,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Showing where the clouds are going to be. So,
well, Quinn White, board member from Marie Drake Planetarium, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know what's happening at Marie Drake.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's going to do it for Juneau Afternoon, broadcast live at KTOO at 104.3 FM, online at kto.org, and rebroadcast on this station at 7 p.m. For more info on the show or to listen to past shows, you can go to kto.org/JuneauAfternoon. Boston Christopher is our producer. We had help today from Aaron Tripp. Our theme music is by Indian Agent, and I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Thanks, everyone, and have a great weekend, and get out there for First Friday.